Welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast, where we talk to C-level leaders from across the payments landscape. We'll be discussing the products and services that impact the payment space today, as well as trends and predictions for the future of payments. We will also hear stories from our guests about their journeys to the top.
Just to give you some numbers, we've got about 150 customers in about 25 countries. We've got 800 million cards globally. We run and manage about 30,000 ATMs for various banks as part of a hosted platform. And we power some of the largest financial inclusion program in the country.
That was Satish Narayana Mohan, the Chief Product Officer of FSS, and he is our special guest this week. This is episode 120 of the Leaders in Payments podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Myers. Satish grew up in a small town in India. He has worked for some of the leading companies in India with assignments in Tokyo, London, Copenhagen, and the US, and he has traveled to over 55 countries. FSS has been in business for 30 years and provides payment services and technology to banks, central regulators, governments, merchants, and more. FSS helps their customers with everything from issuer card programs to omnichannel acquiring, digital banking, payment processing, ATM monitoring, payment security and analytics, and financial inclusion programs. Satish is a nature enthusiast and enjoys bird watching and wildlife photography. We've got a great episode today, so let's get started. Hi, Satish. Thank you for being here and welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast.
Greg, very good morning to you. Thanks for having me in. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you.
Yeah, me too. So let's dive right in. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, where you currently live, a few things like that.
So I grew up in a small town in the South India and in the southern state of India and did my entire schooling out of a large township, so to speak, which was kind of an environment where the country had a lot of public sectors and was trying to create community as part of the industrial growth that the country was in, which where my dad used to work. Growing up, I kind of, you know, understood how to kind of work and be around with people from different segments of life, because a township is a mix of people from both blue-collared and white-collared. And you get to kind of interact, you know, you don't have any barriers. You work with, you play with, you interact with people around this community, and which kind of made me get a clear understanding of the kind of people that you need to deal with in this country as we move along. And also was very active into sports. India's like, as you know, cricket is like a religion. Pretty much everybody used to play cricket then and even now. Of course, now in most cities, we don't have as many open space, I would say. I used to play a lot of cricket and I played really well. So, and represented my district and also played for my school and college. Also played field hockey, which is not so popular, I guess, back in the US. But both these kind of sports gave me a kind of visibility in terms of how you could kind of shine as an individual star, which is possible in a cricket game. Whereas in a hockey, it's purely a team sport and you need to know your partner, their position. So, you know, that kind of brought me more into being very competitive one, understand your team with whom you're playing, what are their strengths, weakness, how's your competition, how do you break the barrier in competition, and also start understanding the fact that winning and losing are both sides of the coin and how do you kind of take your learnings from any loss. And I was able to apply that pretty much in my practical life and whatever I did, Greg. And I went on to do my engineering in electronics and communication after my school. And post that, I just started working. I didn't go for my post-graduation, but I just was lucky enough to get started with my work. That's pretty much what I did as part of the personal part of it. And, you know, you still had some questions at the end to kind of talk about my other interests, so I'm not touching into it for the moment.
Yeah, we'll cover your journey as you got to the role you're in today. We'll cover that in a minute. But let's switch gears from you and let's talk about FSS, if you don't mind. So tell our audience what FSS does.
Okay, FSS is a payment tech firm. It's been in the industry for 3 decades now. And it was one of those companies which kind of pioneered bringing in the ATM switching into the country. The first of the ATM kind of got powered through that. Over the years, in the last 3 decades, FSS pretty much worked with every other bank that you can think of in the market. And it has been fundamentally instrumental in kind of setting the foundation for anything to do with payments, payments product, payments growth, payments tech stack, for every bank that are there. And India is a market, given the size and scale and diversity that we operate on, and the kind of demographic spread that kind of brings a different level of challenge. The company kind of was working very closely with every bank. You look at the largest bank in the country, which is a public sector, probably by far the largest, kind of ranks among the top 5-10 in terms of the scale and the number of customers it services. Is a customer, and we work with them. And because of the scale and size and the kind of offerings that they do across demographics, the kind of complexity that gets behind it is also interestingly, you know, challenging for us to deliver. And we've worked with quite a lot of public sector banks. We work with private sector banks who work in a completely different scale and pace and agility. And we also work with the new age banks, the small finance banks who have come in very recently and who have a different kind of approach to the whole business. And given the 3 decades of experience and working closely with the RBIs and the NPCIs, we've been instrumental in building or enhancing or integrating those initiatives that the government had brought in seamlessly with most of the banks to kind of help deploy them for the end consumers on a day-to-day basis. And I think this rich experience of what we did has been kind of looked at very seriously by the market, and we continue to service them as the market and industry evolves. And if you really look at it, just to give you some numbers, we've got about 150 customers in about 25 countries. We've got 800 million cards globally. We run and manage about 30,000 ATMs for various banks as part of a hosted platform. And we power some of the largest financial inclusion program in the country. Given the size and scale of the unbanked and underbanked in a market like India, we've got a very purpose-driven partnership with some of those initiatives from the government. And that's been significant and brought a lot of purpose to what we do. We handle about 1 billion reconciliation transactions, one of the largest for a single deployment that we do. And on the e-commerce traffic, which has been growing tremendously globally, of course, in India as well, thanks to the pandemic, we've been seeing traffics beyond 2 billion on these e-commerce platform. So I would say as an end-to-end payment stack, starting from the merchant side to the issuance side, to the central payment hub or the real-time payment platform, to the back office in terms of reconciliation, security, the engagement layer with the digital touch points, and all that needs to go from data and insights for better processing of the business are all part of the payment stack that FSS offers today. We do have a large hosted platform in the name of FSSNet, which we started way back, probably the first to offer on the payment side in the market. And we've got quite a few banks who are using pretty much the entire or a combination of these product stacks that I just talked about in these areas for their business, and it runs on a hosted platform. In certain cases, we do managed services. Those are the scale of operation that we do today from FSS as a company.
Okay. And you used a term paytech. So in your own words, what does that really mean and how does it separate you from the other payment service providers out there?
So the fact is, payment industry has been evolving, and I would say the last decade or so, or even about 2 decades, I would say the kind of disruption that's been happening in the space has been significant. As a paytech firm, as I said today, the full payment stack that we bring and scale of operations we do in true production context gives us the experience and the ability and to show or demonstrate scalability, performance, and security and reliability to our customers in banks and large merchants that we service today. And as we know, payments and lending are, at least in the financial service, which are heavily disrupted. And payment is getting more and more ubiquitous. You know, it's kind of part of every other industry and fundamental to any other industry transaction that happens. So we've been enabling this more on the retail payments front for the banks and our merchant players. And how do we differentiate ourselves in terms of some of the new age paytech firms or the other paytech firms is that, one, we bring the entire payment stack. So as a bank today, if you look at any mid-size or tier 2, tier 3 or tier 1 banks that are there in the country today, they pretty much operate on the merchant acquiring side of the business. They do have a very large issuance offering. Debit card is very big in the country. Credit card is growing, you know, compared to the world market, our credit card numbers are not as much. Prepaid business on the whole has a very specific business-driven needs, which we service today. And they've been definitely growing at a much more rapid pace because of the specific needs or use case that are getting addressed from a business standpoint. And there is also a huge need for the switching support, which is where our genesis has been. And we do that. And fundamentally, in any payment transaction, we also have the two-way, three-way, and four-way reconciliation, dispute resolution, refunds, loyalty. So any large banks in the tier 1, 2, 3 would like to look at a partner who could probably handle the entire gamut of stuff for them. And that's a huge differentiator for us. And the fact that we have a very long-standing relationship with some of the established banks, most of them have been in the country for many years. Of course, we have a lot of new banks which have come up in the last 10, 15 years. And because of a long-standing relationship and the trust that we have established with these players, we continue to have a stronghold. At the same time, it's also super important that we realize that we need to continuously keep innovating on what we offer different. Because a payment at the end of it is a simple payment, but every journey, every aspect of a transaction is getting reimagined on a daily basis. And if we kind of don't go and disrupt ourselves in some of the service and offering that we do, it could be probably taken away overnight. So, and hence the agility in which we respond and work on it, not only for ourselves, even including for our customers, because there are different competition coming in different areas. So we continue to innovate at rapid pace to keep ourselves relevant, keep our customers relevant. And we definitely enjoy the kind of competition that's coming up in this space, which is a challenge, not only in this market, but across the globe for players like us.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the broader payments landscape. What are some of the biggest challenges facing global payments companies at the moment, and how can they be overcome?
Yeah, so I think global payment firms today, as I said, the pandemic itself has kind of accelerated a couple of things. One, for sure, the whole acceleration of the digital adoption or the digital transformation, which itself based on data, the market was spending about $2 trillion. I'm saying the global market was spending about $2 trillion on digital transformation. But probably in my view, I don't have the real actual spend or data on that part, but probably in my view, that $2 trillion just planned for 2020 would have crossed $2 trillion given the scale and pace at which every organization had to do the transformation to be able to service the customer from the situation we were in, given the number of transactions that were happening. Secondly, the other challenge that was also coming up is that both the fintechs and the tech fins, I'm sure you've been seeing some of the tech investment that's been happening or the into the startup and ecosystem in the country like India. It's been tremendous what kind of money has been pumped into startups in the last 7 months, 7, 8 months into the country. On a relative comparative scale, the bars are significantly different compared to some of the other markets that are doing. And a big chunk of those investments have been going into payment-led firms because, of course, payments and lending, because this is where most of the friction elements are there from a consumer standpoint. And the fact that parallel acceleration of the digital adoption is happening, the need to kind of address them in speed becomes a relevance. At the same time, customers that we focus on, which is fundamentally the banks and large merchants, they are equally seeing the pressure on their end because the retail payment volumes are progressively being taken by the new age players, both the fintechs and the tech fins or the big techs, the way you want to call them. And they've been able to tap into those opportunity in a significant manner. So, as I said, this phenomenon is happening across every market. And the fact that the global market was also, prior to pandemic, with PSD2 being the primary shift, which kind of brought in the whole open banking and the marketplace stuff to get the better benefits for the customer and transparency, kind of got picked up equally well in every market in the current situations, given the way things were changing, which means essentially, it's no more competition. It's your ability to build your ecosystem and marketplace. And, you know, as I say, the co-optation is the new normal and how efficiently you're able to collaborate with the right adjacency offering to kind of drive that is going to be the key. So aspects like ability to scale at pace, given the spike in volumes that we have seen in the market, particularly in India. So which means your platform, your technology, and the ability to scale on demand, which means you have to be cloud native. That's the first imperative. The second one is marketplace and ecosystem to ensure that you cooperate, collaborate with competition to be able to offer a more end-to-end offering to your consumers and wherever that's relevant for you as a business. And hence, breaking away from your defined scope of saying, this is all I will do, is no more of relevance. So marketplace ecosystem, thanks to open banking and PSD2, becomes the next key element. And the third one is your ability to read and understand data and being more of a data-driven organization. Your ability to analyze what happened, take insights from past transaction, so essentially descriptive and diagnostic, and basis that, how well are you able to predict and start prescribing? I mean, we have not reached there, but at least your ability to start analyzing data, because the pace at which data have grown thanks to the digital adoption in the recent times. So do you have a data model that you could read in areas of high impact, analyze them, understand them, and take some quick business call, not only for yourself, but for your customers as well? So these are three things: cloud native, marketplace ecosystem, and data driven are something that are very imperative to global payment companies like ours, given the various challenges that I touched upon, Greg.
Hey everyone, this is your host Greg Myers with some exciting news to share. October is Financial Inclusion Month, and we're going to be talking about all of the products, services, and ways that the payments and fintech industry help support the underbanked and unbanked. Be on the lookout for the first episode on October 6th. A special thanks to our title sponsors, The Clearinghouse and PaySafe Cash. Now, back to the show. Well, we can't talk about the broader payments landscape without talking about the different payment methods, which obviously can vary by culture, by the banking system, by technology, by regulations, and so on. So maybe bring us up to speed on some of the core developments in traditionally cash-loyal economies like India. What's going on in that space around real-time payments and open banking, and kind of bring us up to speed on that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure, Greg. I think we talked about it, the spike in the digital payments and the digital adoption like market like India. We've seen that the UPI as a rail, which the NPC has brought in, the adoption rate of UPI across spectrum of our users, both from very small merchants to SMEs to, of course, the large players were anyway leveraging that. But I think the de facto mode of payment kind of completely shifted. Some of the consumer side of players who preferred more of, even for simple payment transaction, who preferred more of a cash option or doing a direct physical transfers where required in-store payments, were left with no choice but to kind of quickly understand and use one of the payment options. And with your VPA account, the security of for you to do those transactions becomes a lot more easier. The registration on bill payments kind of took a significant spike in the last few months, soon after the pandemic and the lockdown that started for us in India. And we have seen similar numbers in the other part of the world as well, where the spike in digital payments has been significantly high. So from a market perspective, we see that the digital payment will outgrow the cash significantly. While still cash remains a predominant part of some of the transaction that we see, given the data shows that majority of transactions still happens and happens on cash. People, though there were restrictions, people did have access to cash on those limited times. But what we also are seeing is that the infrastructure and the ability to do those transactions and some of the new initiative that RBI and PCI are bringing in is going to definitely improve the digital adoption more. With the direct benefit transfer, which was happening from the government during the pandemic, most of the accounts that were open in the rural segment as part of the 2014 initiative by our Prime Minister got heavily transacted or utilized during this lockdown. So we had seen a significant spike in those customers who had active accounts but were predominantly dormant, started using it. So that's definitely happening in the market. So the quantum of increase in terms of real-time payments, with India topping it up with 25.5 billion real-time payment transaction, followed by China. And I think our with our NPCI and the UPI framework, it brings huge amount of differentiator for the market. I think the timing could have been no better than now, because the ability to really leverage and see what this framework was truly happened during this pandemic. And I think the scale up with the adoption improved was also fantastic. This is definitely making a huge difference for us as a country, leveraging from a technology player standpoint or a bank's perspective. The gateway gives us interoperability, gives us real-time payments, and the fact that we could seamlessly work with the merchants across lines and start getting more insights about and size and scale of merchants transacting, there is more to these information that we are looking at. And the speed at which we are able to adopt to some of those use cases as a country on the whole, stuff like our national electronic toll or transit, we are going into the adoption of BNPL, EMI options have all kind of taken significant relevance in this current last 15 to 18 months through this pandemic. And it's been really good, I would say, from the growth has got accelerated. That's a positive side of looking at the pandemic for us on the whole as an economy and as a country. And for tech players like us, every day brings a new set of challenges that we need to be able to solve for different customers that we service. That's been really great for us.
Yeah, and you've touched on it a couple of times already, how the pandemic has really accelerated so much in the payments industry, from just the digitization, the use of non-cash, if I can use that term. But, you know, there's been so much acceleration in technology in our space. Having said that, so many things that we thought were 2 or 3 years away are happening now. So where do you see the payments industry heading, say, in the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, so I mean, we've been seeing how payments is becoming more ubiquitous. I think payments would become instant, and a few markets today are doing this very effectively. And we are fortunate that we are part of the Indian market and servicing that at scale. So we know what exactly it means to be instant. It is going to be individualized. So at every individual level, we will be able to know what's your BPA account. Of course, with the customer consent, what kind of transactions, how do we give them better choice and benefits, and how do we give that personalized experience for each customer? And as I said, it's going to be completely invisible. Most often, you will have direct mandates for certain recurring payments. As I said, the registration on bill payment has been the highest. So most standard payouts would then become, including P2P, G2P, or B2B scenarios, would all become invisible, because you start kind of keeping them as part of your mandates and making life easier for you to focus on those exceptions and those deltas that come across. It has to become a lot more intelligent, because the way in which the industries, the volumes are scaling across platforms, and the business and the consumers will have to have a very intelligent support coming out from the market in all aspects. So this is like the four eyes, what the market defines, like instant, individualized, invisible, and intelligent. And the fact that the markets are very diverse, and it's not going to be like one size fits all. So your ability to be able to service the retail segment at different size and scale, and payments going as low in value. So you're going to have a significant amount of low value, high volume payments. How do you bring your cost of transaction lower and also bring that level of scale and security of those transactions? So that becomes important. So how do you bring more smarter, faster, and cheaper tech stack to support that is going to be important. And the convergence that's happening in the industry today across different industry, be it retail, be it healthcare, the embedded finance aspect or the invisible payment part that we talked about would become more and more pre-integrated with the journeys there. And from a customer standpoint and from the merchant or the business standpoint, these are elements that they need to start offering. At the same time, the choice for payments are increasing. Sometimes it could get complicated from a consumer standpoint to decide which one to choose. So that's where the intelligence has to play a part. So giving suggested recommendation, what's the best payment, or just leave the system to take the best decision, the lower cost, a faster way of settling in should be taken by the business call. So the customers don't have to worry. They just decide who needs to get the payment. and what rails the payment take is not something that they need to worry about. It's more of the platform. And finally, we need to look at getting onto the ecosystem in a more structured and a mature part. This is definitely something that's going to bring significant dependencies, because you need to, as a payment industry, players have to decide between being a customer owner or a service provider. So you could be a service provider in a very niche area and you choose to be that, or you start owning the customer value chain and start servicing that part. So this becomes very relevant. And the way in which the global market today is also transitioning in terms of the real-time payments adoption, quite a few markets who have been having a good central bank or a central payment platform for payment processing have realized that they need to get into more real-time payments to kind of support the digital payments across segments and across values. And that's becoming super relevant from the country's economy as well. And I think I'm sure you must be having seen those data. The number of central banks looking at getting on to real-time payments and digital payment infrastructure is on the rise, because that's very important for the country, for the economy, for the geography to kind of scale up. So it's going to be a lot more interesting, the speed at which things are going to change, and the ability to support them on the whole is going to be very different. And those are exciting, challenging times ahead, and we are quite excited about it.
Yeah, that's a lot to think about and to position yourself for. What about even longer term? So maybe 5 to 10 years out. So what do you think the future of the payments ecosystem globally starts to look like? And how does FSS play a role in that?
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of things. I mean, we really talked about some of the what we see in the next 2 to 3 years. We touched on a few aspects. Of course, there were quite a lot of other points that we wanted to look at. But I think on the long term, in every segment that you're looking at, you know, if I take retail as a segment, for example, the size of the e-commerce retail market in the US is $600 billion, and that's expected to grow at 2x to 3x in the next 3 to 5 years, given the number of Gen Zs, millennials who are going to come into the mainstream. And US has been a big market, while the same adoption value is going to increase, like markets like India with the internet usage counts, which are crossing over 700 million. Smartphone initiatives coming from some big players where the possibility to access smartphone devices is going to be easier. The cost of these devices are being brought down, because then that kind of initiates better transactions and accessibility for the significant portion of our customers. And that would apply for markets like Brazil, Indonesia, and various other large markets. We are also going to see an increased hike in terms of markets adopting to better payment options like simple EMIs with reduced interest rates. BNPL picking up in the markets is a good sign of those. So on the long term, the partner ecosystem, payment ecosystem globally, we'll have to start seeing the spike in different industries. And I think the quantum jump that have been foreseen, be it in the, I took retail industry as an example, they're expecting a significant jump in some of the mature markets. While the transactions are happening, the lending gets infused like a BNPL or EMI into a payment transaction. So that's actually a complicated merger of two business line from a traditional banking concept, but the consumer doesn't care. So how do you give them a better option? So while that's still in a very nascent stage, that's going to bring those kind of increased swell in those transactions and volumes across. 5G, IoT, and the ability for smart devices in more mature markets is going to start transacting by themselves very soon. These are numbers at this point in time are probably more theoretical study of what these numbers could be. But I think once it starts hitting, you don't know how often these devices like your refrigerator shopping for itself and mature market transaction globally, you know, the segment that we're talking about is fairly huge in terms of numbers. And that's also going to drive some significant growth in the space. So the next 5 to 10 years are definitely looking an increased level of transaction from a payment standpoint. And I think how you architect your platform, how you define your business models, how do you leverage your partner ecosystem, What are the ways in which you could potentially monetize? How do you hop and limit the number of hops in a transaction where possible in a traditional stack? And from your ability to bring tech stack with more APIs, SDKs, open source, bringing communities to work on these elements to solve problems at scale is where those differentiators are going to be. So the payment industry is, or the banking industry on the whole, or across industry, there's going to be a significant adoption on technology as we scale. And the numbers are looking super promising as this grows. And it's definitely a different challenge for the market and everyone else to be able to tap in and start solving them. And some of these are really looked at in ahead of time, thanks to the whole fintech and startup ecosystem in every part of the world. So there are everyday people are, you know, looking at these possibilities, and there is at least a few companies working on those initiatives which are like 3 years, 4 years down the line. It's about tapping into those partnership or potential M&A where required in the industry is what's going to happen. So I'm really, you know, looking at this as a great opportunity for the industry, the tech industry on the whole, payment from a larger economy perspective. And I think from a purpose standpoint, it's going to make a difference to a huge portion of the unbanked and underbanked as well. With the reach of 5G and easy affordability for smartphones is going to make a big difference. And all the big players, some of the big techs are actively engaged on bringing those to the global market in terms of accessibility of internet, smart devices, and, you know, reach or potential small ecosystem that could form in different economies and how those could get connected with fundamental needs. It's definitely showing a significant opportunity on the whole. And I think some of the numbers that we have seen in the recent past, I mean, just before pandemic, if you look at what's been some of the data analysis done by some of the analyst firms, I think they are getting super recalibrated at scale. And I mean, I wouldn't blame them. I think nobody expected this to hit at this scale, but it's going to look very promising, and it's all about your ability and agility and speed at which you're able to adopt to those changes is what makes you brings the differentiator in whichever industry you are in, Greg. That's my view personally.
Yeah, I think listening to you talk through all that, it's like there's so much more for the payments industry to do. You know, we've come a long way in the last 20 years, 30 years, but gosh, with all the fintechs coming into the industry, all the money being put into the industry, all of the different ways to serve customers in different ways, like you said, your refrigerator ordering food for you. And I think another big one is, at least in the US, how does your car play into commerce, right? And you're having all that embedded commerce capability through your vehicle. And I mean, there's just so much more. And then you touched on a huge topic, the financial inclusion. And there's a whole segment of consumers out there in the unbanked and underbanked world that need access, right? So, I mean, there's just so much more opportunity. I just really appreciate you kind of giving us that overview. But if you don't mind, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you. Earlier in the conversation, you talked about sort of your personal side of you growing up and everything. So maybe if you don't mind talking about your professional journey. So how did you get from your first job through to where you are now as the chief product officer there?
Okay, so I've been fortunate to be a part of the product tech industry from India for over two decades. I worked with some of the two leading product firms which kind of build products out of the Indian market and are running globally in every other market. I've seen those growth from the first deployment to growth to hyper growth phase in different markets. And that's been personally very satisfying. And if you look at that, Greg, the difference is while India, since the early 90s, thanks to those reforms that the government brought in then, India was quite big on tech space and we are still very big. But at least if you, some of the data points, numbers, I may be slightly variant, plus or minus 10, 15% on that. But just to give you a size and sense of the scale of the work. So our annual revenue a couple of years ago from tech industry was over close to 200 billion, you know, give or take. Of that, if you really look at it, product and engineering R&D, which was largely under the services arm, was about 35 billion. And assuming that R&D is fundamentally the services, large services, SI players building for big product firms outside of India, in terms of building their product stack based on designs that they were getting. So assume you take about 50, 60% of that from the 35 billion. The Indian product contribution was somewhere about 15, 16 billion. And globally, this number is somewhere about 500 billion, anywhere between 450 to 500 billion of product opportunity. And we are probably, in my view, we are probably very low, though we have spent significant amount of years in the tech space. So personally, from my standpoint, probably in the early years as a tech player, have been really fortunate to be worked with some of the global product brands that has come out of India. So I would say a small niche of those early players who have been in product space. So that's something which has kind of gave me this opportunity to work with some great products. I've been lucky to have worked 5 years out of Japan, Tokyo, 3 years out of London, and 3 years out of Copenhagen, and about close to 3+ years in the US. I've been fortunate to have traveled to over 55, 60 countries on work and worked with different financial institutions and understood various complexities, be it from a banking standpoint or driving return on equity or bringing more digital transformation initiated in the last 4 years and bringing more contextual and personal experience for customers and simplifying not only from a customer standpoint or the customer experience standpoint, but also from the employee experience standpoint. So journey has been great. I would say I'm probably humbled and a lot of gratitude to what's come my way. And I really enjoy going through the product part of it in the last few years. And I continue to do that in FSS as a chief product officer. And FSS, as you know, has been largely focused out of India market. If you really look at it from a payment disruption or payment impact standpoint, there are very few markets like India, a few countries in Nordics and Singapore, to name a few, have done really advanced payment capability for the larger public. And we've been fortunate to have built and innovated at scale for supporting that to being part of this whole payment ecosystem, which the government, the central bank, RBI, and PCI have created for this economy. So the focus now is to build products that we have been successful in this market for the rest of the world, bring the level of standardization and ability to quickly roll out onto different markets who are looking at leveraging the significant scale that we have achieved. And that's something that I'm doing today as part of FSS.
Okay. What is something that you're passionate about? So maybe it's work-related or personal, but what is something you have a passion for?
I'm really passionate about nature and wildlife. You know, something that I picked up at a very young age. Where I grew up, we had a lot of trees and you could always see huge amount of flora and fauna. And I love sitting and watching them for hours when I can't go out and play, you know, when it's really hot during summers, I just sit and watch through my window. And over the years now, I continue to, every given opportunity, I kind of get away from my city to any nearby forest and start watching them. And I do photography as a hobby. But what that's brought to me was, like, you know, most of the problems you could get an answer from nature. And product, for me, I could relate to it, though subconsciously I didn't pick that early. But product business about if your ability to observe, ability to be patient, and also your ability to think on behalf of what's going to come is something that's very important for any product person. And probably this passion for me in nature kind of helped me do it better in products from what I'm doing. But of course, the whole ecosystem also is kind of really good in the market that we operate in today. And the other aspect is I do really enjoy traveling, and the fact that I was lucky enough to interact and work with customers in different parts of the world. And you see, fundamentally, you know, the technology could be different in different parts of the market. The size and scale could be very different in different parts of the market. But everybody is striving on a daily basis to see how do they solve the problems better for their customers and in their operations internally, thereby giving a better experience on the whole to their customers. And so the problems are very similar, and you get to see a set of patterns emerging when you go across. And I was also fortunate to have worked with some of the non-financial firms, a large telco in the US, a large travel company. And fundamentally, it's all about how do you look at a customer problem and start solving it better? So true customer centricity is something that's evolved. Of course, this industry has been more product centric 20 years back. But now it's all about customer centricity, and it's gone down to even, I would say, more the segment of one, your ability to know every individual customer that you're servicing or the neighborhood you're going to service becomes far more relevant. And your ability to design products which could dynamically adapt to those needs is where your differentiators are going to be. And I think I probably am kind of passionate. I see nature and products kind of very well connected, and you could possibly get some answers from most of what you're trying to solve from nature is what I believe.
I would agree with you there for sure. And you've had a lot of experience globally and vast different kinds of experience. So curious to your answer for this question. What piece of advice would you give someone that's considering payments technology industry as a career?
As we kind of through this discussion that we had, Greg, we talked about how the industry is transforming in the next 2 to 3 years and in also slightly long term. So any transaction that's going to happen, irrespective of what industry you're working on, the transaction will have a payments involved. You could call it the exchange of value. It could be tangible or intangible, but there is going to be a transaction that's going to happen, and the transaction will have a tangible currency involved, or it could be something else that could get logged and balance kept. So every transaction today needs a payment framework or a payment platform or a payment vehicle. So the opportunity there is definitely significant. To most of the markets globally that we are talking about, I just mentioned few countries like India, Singapore, and few countries in Nordics who are probably on a much better position with the adoption of digital than others. Of course, the other markets are catching up faster. That gives us a good substantial 200 odd countries which are looking at improving their payment infrastructure. So, which means that's going to be in significant scale. And as we evolve every day, even in a mature market where the digital payment infrastructure is really good, every day we see there is a need for something else that we don't support. And I took examples of your payment converging with lending and your ability to break a payment into 3, 4, 6, whatever that customer demands today. Seems like you're going to ride a loan servicing on repayment transaction. So, and you could have many of those variants coming up closely tied in. And the fact that the way the financial industry is kind of looking at this to be able to service it, the opportunities are immense. So the way I look at it is you could be in any industry that you are operating today. You could be a fresher out of school, but this is one space that you should definitely see a great opportunity to work for the reason that I talked about. And secondly, if you really look at the kind of investment, you look at the data of the startup investment, the funding that's going in, a lion's share of the investment in the fintech space goes into payment, which means the investor community are really betting big on this because they see the size, the opportunities, some of those untapped stuff that we are not very familiar the way they look at it. And quite a lot of visionary in the market are looking at this and continue to invest on this. So these are all, in my view, great positive signs for anybody to look at this industry. And I see great possibilities for somebody having the right tech expertise and the ability to quickly learn and understand some standard challenges and friction points that they're able to pick up and start solving them. So yeah, it's a great space to be in the financial service space, Greg, as I see.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Well, Satish, we've covered a lot of ground on the company, on the industry and where it's heading, and you personally. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I think this was a great conversation. I think you had a great bunch of questions. And while I try to put my perspective on it, you know, it's very difficult on certain areas. It's very difficult to kind of foresee what's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. A lot of what I shared are my personal view, what I've learned, what I see the market as. I hope this is kind of useful for people who are going to listen to it. And I really look forward to having more such conversation with you, Greg, going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I know your time is very valuable, so I really appreciate you being here.
Great. Thanks, Greg. And thanks for this opportunity. And thanks for having me here on this conversation. Really enjoyed every bit of it.
Yes, I did too. And to all you listeners out there, I thank you for your time as well. And until the next story.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Leaders in Payments podcast. Make sure you visit our website at leadersinpayments.com, where you can subscribe to the show and where you'll find our show notes. If you enjoyed listening, please share on your social channels as well.